To quote John Maxwell, if you think you're leading and no one is following, well, you're just taking a walk. Are you going for a walk today? Is anyone even walking with you? Here's some food for thought to start your week. A healthy work environment is rooted in trust. You can't buy trust with a paycheck and good benefits. You have to earn it with consistent actions and deeds. We sell our trustworthiness to others every single day. What can we do to ensure that when we say, come on everyone, it's time to go, that we aren't trekking off alone? Well, today's guest, Ron Tite, has a few things to say about this from a marketer's perspective, which should be very interesting. So stay tuned for a quick preview.
It's time for a sneak peek.
You said you need to talk about it in an honest and imperfect way. What do you mean by that?
The things are imperfections. They're not bugs, they're features. And they make us who we are. And that's what people buy. And that's what people trust. So if you show up looking and acting and sounding like the stock photo version of what you think a leader is supposed to be, and supposed to look and act and sound like, I'm not buying it. So in the past, if we would do that, the director of photography, the director would get fired. That'd be horrible. Like, you just wrecked the entire commercial shoot. Now we consciously put lens flares in.
And now on with the show.
I'm Dr. Heather Walker, and this is Lead with Levity. I help leaders create awesome work environments where communication is light, enjoyable, and uplifting. I shed light on the power of levity at work. Imagine just how much you can get done in that kind of environment. Come explore with me. Awesome. So everyone, welcome back. If you're just tuning in, I've got Ron Tite with me today. Ron is an advertising professional, and he is bringing truth as well as trust back to marketing. And, you know, when you're competing with people's attention at work, we're all trying to figure out how can we get our message across in a thoughtful and meaningful way so that we can rally people to action. So I thought it would be really wonderful if I brought a different and fresh perspective to this, someone with a marketing perspective, an advertising perspective today, to augment what you know about human resources and leadership. So Ron, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Heather. It's great to be here.
Ron, can you tell me a little bit about Church and State? What are y'all all about?
Well, first of all, if anybody ever says, what are y'all about? The next thing they typically say is, are y'all a spiritual organization? And no, we are not. So Church and State, for those who work in advertising, they will know that the phrase, the separation of church and state, is typically applied to the relationship between advertising and content. You know, like if you want a newspaper to run an article, you don't buy an ad. I mean, that's not how that works. Or in the past, that had worked. And we believe that it's no longer the separation of church and state, but it is the unification of church and state. That, you know, now any ad can actually be a piece of content if it's good enough. And any piece of content can actually be an ad if it's responsible enough and it's authentic enough. And so that's the kind of the space that we play in. And so we work with brands and we work with media companies and we work with people. And what we do is we, given the understanding that we're all, you know, just in a big battle for time. And, you know, Heather, if you're pumping out content for people to consume, you're actually competing against Time Magazine. And so as an individual, right. You should think the same way and apply the same process and standards to the work that you generate as a Time Magazine does, as a Procter & Gamble does. It doesn't matter whether you're a brand, whether you're a media company, or whether you're a person. We're all just competing for time. And so those are the three buckets of groups that we work with.
Okay. I would say that the majority of listeners that I have may need to do some internal marketing, if you will, mm-hmm. of different programs, change initiatives, convincing employees to get on board. What mm-hmm. are some of the best techniques that you've seen, as well as maybe the worst?
Well, the best thing to do, if we look at yourself as an individual, the competing forces at play for everybody as an individual is the comfort doing the things that got us to where we are, and the uncomfortable aspect of introducing new behaviors. And we know that new behaviors are what lead to growth. And so we have to commit this to this idea of personal reinvention. And if we're going to personally reinvent, you know, if we look at an organization, you know, look, like no organization in the history of capitalism has ever changed, because organizations don't change. People do. So that's why we can apply the exact same thinking, that the organization doesn't mean anything. It's nothing. It's a logo on a piece of paper. It is really just the combination and the accumulation of all the actions that the individuals within an organization take. So the first thing we need to do is we need to look at, well, why do we need to change if we've been successful doing these things? And in this interesting approach, there is this idea of the difference between an assembly line and a concept car in a car manufacturing environment. And the assembly line is the tried and true process. It's very, very efficient. Everybody knows exactly what they're supposed to do, and you do it over and over and over again. And that's where you make your money. So as individuals, there are things that we do that we're experienced in that, you know, we generate revenue from. And again, whether that's we're our own business and we have activities, or whether it's we're an employee within a large organization and we get our salary because we're good at one particular thing. And so we have to do that and get it to the point where it's repeatable behavior. But if you only ever do that, you're going to look up one day and it's all going to be gone, because you wouldn't have adapted, you wouldn't have tried new things, you wouldn't have innovated, and you wouldn't have introduced new skill sets. So in the car manufacturing environment, what they do is they create a concept car. And the concept car is off the assembly line. There's no hope that this thing is ever going to go into production. And what they do is they do it to do it. And then after doing it, they, you know, can look and study it to see, oh, look, this gas cap, this what can integrate into the assembly line. So it's this responsible innovation over time. The problem with a lot of companies and the problem with a lot of people is that we're trying to apply the concept car thinking to the assembly line. We're just trying to jam in a whole bunch of new things. And so, and we see this happen every year on January 1st, right? People are like, I got a New Year's resolution, and this year I'm going to join Snapchat, and I'm going to get on Twitter, and I'm going to write a book, and I'm going to create a new recipe. And you've loaded yourself up with 5 million new things. That's not a responsible way to innovate. So that was, I think, part one of your question. Part two, yeah, but how do I motivate and inspire people to join me? And that is, based on what you think, what you do, and what you say. People need to know exactly what you believe in. They need to see that you follow that up with actions that reinforce that belief. And you need to talk about it in a really authentic and honest and imperfect way to get as many people on your side as possible. So it's based on what you think, what you do, and what you say.
So you said something there. You said we need to talk about it. You need to talk about it in an honest and imperfect way. What do you mean by that?
There's two types of honesty. And to all the sticklers, this may not be the official. They're like, that's actually not the definition of authenticity. So, but I think there's two types of honesty. The first type of honesty is the external honesty with your stakeholders. So you need to be honest with, you don't lie to your customers. You don't lie to your employees. The second one, though, is I think maybe not more important, but certainly more powerful. And that is being honest with yourself. And so being honest with yourself, I think, is authenticity. Authenticity is just being comfortable with your imperfections. And to get people to follow you, you need to build trust. And to get trust, you need to be authentic. Because if you, well, here's an example. In advertising, we used to have something pop up from time to time called a lens flare. Now, so if you're shooting a commercial, a lens flare is when a ray of the sun hits the lens and it creates that flare that appears on the screen, you know, and it's a mistake typically in NI. You don't want the sun shining directly into the camera and creating this lens flare. So in the past, if we would do that, the director of photography, the director would get fired. If you had a commercial with a lens flare, that'd be horrible. Like, you just wrecked the entire commercial shoot. Oh, now we consciously put lens flares in. And we do that because it's imperfect, because it's not the scripted version. It's not the stock photo version of what a commercial shoot should be like. And people look for that because they trust imperfection. And when we talk about things, the leaders who talk about things in a really scripted, perfect way, because they think they're supposed to check all the boxes, they're supposed to say all the things they want to say, they read from a script instead of speaking from their heart, because they're afraid of missing something. Those people aren't trusted. Because if you're not showing your true self, if you're hiding your true self from me, what else are you hiding? And so when we talk about things, we have to talk about it in an authentic way. Now, you will love this, given our conversation before we started the recording. I was doing some work I was doing a presentation to these 100 CEOs. And there was a CEO there who is a chairman of now a global software company that everybody would know. Can't say who it is. And he is from the South and has a pretty thick Southern accent. And when he was at a CPG company earlier in his career, he rose to the level of vice president. And the company sent him on a leadership development course. And the whole point of the leadership development course was to get him to lose his Southern accent.
Oh, no.
Because they didn't feel, they didn't feel that he would be credible on the global stage with a Southern accent. And so, delivered in the best way possible, he said to me, "And so I quit because I realized my voice, it's not a bug, it's a feature." And I love that notion that the things are imperfections. They're not bugs, they're features. And they make us who we are. And that's what people buy. And that's what people trust. So if you show up looking and acting and sounding like the stock photo version of what you think a leader is supposed to be, and supposed to look and act and sound like, I'm not buying it.
Perfect. Yeah, that is hilarious, by the way. you're so right about authenticity and how crucial that is to building trust. I read some highlights from one of your books. I think it was Don't Ping Me, that one. It brought up, like, it was almost triggering in a way. You know, there's some buzzwords that people use, like synergy, mm-hmm. and we're gonna call this a solution. I used to work for a software company, and it took me about 6 months to figure out what did they mean by solution? What are we selling? Isn't this just software? I'm confused. Yeah. So these messages are prevalent. And if you want to be one of the big boys and if you want to be trending, you use this language. But in your book, you talk about how that is actually hurting trust.
Well, I think it erodes trust because, well, two things. One, if you're just saying all those things that everybody is all those buzzwords that you think you're supposed to say. I mean, read any mission statement from any organization. It's buzzword bingo. Right. They go, "Oh, I got a full card on that one." I mean, there's nothing there but buzzwords. And so the problem with that is you're actually not saying anything. So if you actually believe in something that's unique and that's different, and you're trying to communicate that in a way that gets people on side, it's not working. Because they're actually not getting the full meaning. And we see this. I do a lot of work, some consulting work with frontline employees. And I'm talking, you know, frontline like grocery store cashiers and deli clerks. And when you talk to those people about the mission and vision statements of their organization, A, they're calling BS on a lot of it. And B, they don't know what it means. No, they can recite it, but they have no clue what it means to their actual their individual contribution to the organization and how that's supposed to guide their behavior. No clue, because it's just filled with buzzwords. But how it erodes trust is that, again, you're not showing your true self. because you're choosing to use the words that everybody else uses that mean nothing to you and nothing to them. And so if you're trying to game the system to just use the words that you think will make you sound smart or make you sound popular, you're hiding your true self. And again, you know, it's that notion that if you're hiding your true self, well, what else are you hiding from me?
Right. I'm actually surprised that you were able to get them to recite the mission statement.
Well, they can do it because a lot of times CEOs, they beat it into their head, right? They're like on their onboarding process. And then the CEO, every offsite, the first slide is, let's take a look at our mission statement, remind ourselves what our mission statement is. Repeat after me, you know? And
right. And our values. Yes. And yeah, yeah. Do you feel like companies are leaning a little bit too hard on what I would consider the dark side of marketing?
So that I understand.
What do you mean by that? So I'm a psychologist, an organizational mm-hmm. psychologist. And the dark side for us would be, you know, we study attitudes, we study motivation, we study what makes people tick. And you can use your powers for good to build people up, to build organizations yeah. up, to help people get to a point where they can function and they have that capacity to do everything on their own. Or you can use it for the dark side. We're building algorithms because we know if I pull this trigger, I can get them to buy this product. I know that if I say this thing, it's going to change their attitude about it, but it's in a very phony type of way.
Yeah.
Not necessarily to help someone else. So I call that the dark mm-hmm, side. Mm-hmm. Because with marketing, you know, the dark side of marketing is I can change your mind about something. I can sell you something, and I might not even have a product to sell, but I've got you so revved up about this thing that I've sold you on. I can take all your money and leave in the middle of the night, and you're just left standing there. I haven't helped you at all. Yeah.
So does the dark side exist? Yep. It certainly exists, and it exists in every industry. It exists in every career and every profession that there are people who will lie and cheat their way into their definition of success. And does that work? Yep, it does sometimes, that you can manipulate the situation to get the sale. There are, I think, a couple of things at play there. The first is a true advertising or marketing professional believes this, and I would include myself in this. At the heart of advertising and marketing is understanding that people need to buy things. They need to buy things for rational reasons, and they need to buy things for emotional reasons. And different products have, you know, different breakdowns of some are more emotional than rational and some are, you know, completely rational. Right. And so people do need to buy things and for those reasons. A perfect product is the product where somebody says, that's exactly what I need. That's exactly what I want. And it's exactly delivered at the time that they want or need it. And that is complete success. And that is delivered in the most efficient way from an advertiser. Now, truly, truly, truly effective advertising is done in that way, that it's to the right person at the right time with the exact right product delivered with the right emotions that they exactly need in that moment. Now, if you get an ad that is not relevant to you, and they're trying to trick me into buying something, that is a wasted advertising dollar. And so that is ineffective advertising. And so now, does that happen? Yes. Sometimes you try and get it right. You try and deliver the right messaging to the right people to hook them up with the products they want, and you don't have enough data, or you got wrong. And so sometimes people do see stuff that they shouldn't see. It's not relevant to them. So that's one angle. The second thing is that, well, if we look at the Times Square as a metaphor, on one level, you have the most expensive promotional real estate in North America. It is filled with billboards, massive, expensive billboards from big brands that can afford to be there. And the average consumer doesn't know where to look. Most expensive real estate in North America, promotional real estate, it's filled with opportunity. There's 400,000 people trape through Times Square every single day. And everybody wants to be there. But to the person that it matters to, they have no idea where to look. They have no clue. Now, worse is down on the street. Because down on the street, you have people who are coming up to you directly. They're really aggressive. They're trying to get you to buy a t-shirt. Somebody else is telling you that the end of the world is coming. Somebody else is selling street meat. Somebody else is trying to get you into a comedy club because there's a cover charge. And those people mm-hmm. can be way more nimble and way more aggressive and way more targeted, but we don't know whether we trust them. And so at play right now is these competing forces of these big, big brands who have expensive budgets that they can afford to say whatever they want and develop the best products. And then there are people who can create content at the drop of a dime, and they can pretend like they have all the sophistication and be really, really aggressive with their targeting, but we're not sure whether we trust them. The sweet spot is in the middle. And there is only one recipe for success in advertising and marketing, and that is creating the best product that you possibly can for a specific group of people. And if as long as there's enough of those people to allow you to make a business, then you've got something. Everything else is just trying to get you to do that. You're trying to find out if it's the right people. You're trying to find out, you know, if it's the right product. And the dark force are the people who use those things for evil. And I have to tell you, they may win the short game. They don't win the long game. Because we find out, right. We don't trust them, we dig deeper, and we find that it's BS, and we walk away. And they're happy knowing that you're going to leave, and they're happy with the churn because they know they're going to get another sucker tomorrow. And so, you know, again, those people exist in every state. They exist in the clergy, those people, these dishonest people. And so the only choice as a marketer isn't, do you want to be effective? It's what type of person do you want to be while you're being effective? I don't want to be that person. I want to be the person that's based in truth and honesty and adding value to my customers, not cheating them.
So there is that side of it where there are lots of messages and we're competing with big box brands that have the dollars. What I'm seeing in organizations right now is that it's not, oh, we have this great product and finding out who it works with, but just getting that message out there and to a point where people are actually recognizing that there's a message there for them because they're oversaturated with messaging, mm-hmm. Which goes back to your Times Square analogy. What I'm seeing is that with all of the algorithms that we have out right now, we've got platforms that tailor content to people. You only see what you want to see at this point. And everyone lives in their own separate world that is tailor-made mm-hmm. for them. But organizations haven't necessarily caught up with that kind of technology. We're still dealing with email and sending it out to everybody. Yeah. or I have this listserv. I'm going to send it out to this whole group of people. We're not necessarily tailoring our messages so that we're competing on that level with employees. Are there any tools or tips that you have for organizations that are trying to compete for attention with a workforce that's really used to having messaging that meets their needs and that's focused and targeted language specifically for them? How can organizations compete with that?
Well, the first thing is you're right that we know that, you know, the closer it is to home, customized for us, we're all little snowflakes, right? We all want stuff that right. because we consider ourselves truly unique human beings. And when somebody understands that and when somebody targets that and uses that to deliver customized services, that we love that. And it cuts through the noise way better. If you're standing in a party, you could be on the other side of the room with the kind of the hum of the conversation going on. And if someone says your name on the other side of the room, you hear it. And, you know, when Coca-Cola came out with the who would you share a Coke with and have a name on the label, people, you know, like, oh, look, you can share a Coke with Dan. People are like, screw Dan. I don't want to share a Coke with Dan. I want to share a Coke with myself. And they'd look for a Coke with their name on it, right? Everybody, they look through the fridges for a Coke with their name on it. So, yes, customization is and personalization allows you to cut through. There's two ways to do that. One is to have a data infrastructure that allows you to collect the relevant data. There's kind of four steps to that. You need to be able to collect the relevant data. You have some sort of process where people are filling out stuff or you're tracking things, you're getting structured or unstructured data. Unstructured data being, you know, stuff that they're just saying on a whim that they're talking about in social media. You're picking up these cues. Structured data being, this is my name, this is my birth date, these are the things that I like. So you need some sort of basis to collect that. The second thing you need to do is you need some sort of process or tool to analyze that. So gather it all together and look at the trends in the data and see what you gather from that. The third part is you need to gather insights from that data. So, more people really are responding to this offer. And this person who lives at this postal code is specifically responding to that offer. And so you need to gather what those insights are. And then the last part is you need a process by which you can customize the stuff that you're talking about to match the insights that you've just gathered from the data. So those are the four buckets of this really heavy data approach. Now, that could be something that you've built across a full enterprise and you've got a massive data infrastructure that can deliver all those things to you. But without the second part, nothing works. And the second part is you need to empower your people, and your people need to have a genuine desire to connect with another human being. And so if you're telling everybody that there's this massive data infrastructure that you can connect with your prospects and customers on, yet the people on your team don't have the desire to check out a friend's Facebook post to see what they did on the weekend so they can customize the messaging, so that they can handwrite a note to somebody to say, happy birthday, I know it's your birthday. If they don't have that genuine desire to do those small actions that are targeted to an individual, they are never going to have the desire to change their management style to match the individual. And they're never going to have the desire to use this massive data infrastructure that's going to spit out customized things. So I think it's got to be a little bit of both. Using data, but also having a genuine desire to actually connect with another human being.
If we were to look at the employee experience from maybe a marketing perspective instead of an HR perspective, how would we approach it differently? Help us see things through your lens.
Yeah. So great brands are based on what they think, what they do, what they say. Great leaders are based on what they think, what they do, what they say. So the first thing we need to do is we need to establish what that is for the organization. So if we're going to communicate this to the employees to get everybody on side, we need to do that. So based on what you think, what you do, and what you say, the think part is, what do you firmly believe in? Like, I know what you sell and I know the idea or the organization exists, but what is your purpose? And an organization has to have that. And by the way, it's not to make the best product that we make. That's not purpose. And so we have to go.
Some people are about to be very upset.
Yeah, well, because other people do that. Like, that's not why you exist.
They do.
I mean, 99.9% of the products out there, they're not proprietary. I'm sorry. You make a thing and there's four other people that make the same thing. So what do you fundamentally believe in? And something really interesting happened about 5 weeks ago now. The Business Roundtable, which is a group of 181 CEOs representing about 35% of the total market cap in the U.S., are part of an organization. They gathered, and the chair of the board is the CEO of Walmart. And they gathered 5 weeks ago and decided as a group to change the definition of what a corporation is. Now, in 1970, Milton Friedman wrote a paper that the sole purpose of a corporation is to increase and maximize the profits. And so for years, everybody looked to Friedman's paper and said, this is our sole goal, to make as much money as possible. If you need a direction, that's your direction. We have one constituent. It is the shareholder. And our job is to give that person as much money as possible, and then they can decide what to do with it. And 5 weeks ago, the Business Roundtable decided that, no, the corporation now has five constituents. It has the customer. It has its employees. It has its partners, it has its shareholders, and it has the community. So you are now morally obligated, by definition of the Business Roundtable, of what a corporation actually is, to elevate that conversation, to elevate the thing you believe in, because you now have five constituents to deal with. So that's the first part. You need to believe in something beyond the thing you sell. The second part is, What actions do you take to reinforce that belief as an organization? What decisions has the executive team made to reinforce that belief? The third part is how do you then talk about it? And this is the marketing message. Well, we know that marketing, some things work to get people on side. And that's exactly why if you want to link up the employee experience with what you believe and what you do so that the individuals can believe in the same thing and the individuals can look to what actions can they do in the role that they play to fulfill the mandate of the organization and the belief of the organization. And when that occurs, or when people within an organization think, do, and say what the organization think, does, and says, now we have complete organizational alignment. And that's when we gather and we get organizational momentum moving forward. Now, that's not to say that everybody should be saying the same script. We have to hire people based on their values and that they share the same purpose. We need to empower them to take the actions that they need to take. And we need to empower them to be their authentic selves. And when that occurs, now we have a great thing happening that everybody, we're all working in the same direction. So, right. You know, the marketing side of the say is I think the easy part. I mean, that's the thing what I do, but it's the easy part because, well, what do you say? You say what you believe and what you do to reinforce the belief. That's what you say. How do you say it? Well, you say it in a really authentic way that's organizationally authenticity is your corporate culture. And then you say it in a simple way so that people can remember it. And you say it, the final part of this is that you say it with stories. So I told you that I was the creative director on Dell at one point, and you can walk into Dell, and I mean anybody within Dell at any level of the organization, and play dumb and say, "So, hey, how was this organization? Where did this come from?" You know, and everybody knew the story. And they'd sit you down and they get this kind of, you know, glint in their eye. And they say, when Michael Dell was in first year at the University of Texas in his dormitory, he realized that people were buying and paying for components within computers that they didn't need. And so he started to customize the manufacturing of computers from his dorm room. Everybody knew the story. And not only did they know the story, but everybody then firmly and clearly understood the entrepreneurial nature of why that organization existed. Because Michael Dell, in his soul, believed that people didn't need the middleman, that people were paying for components they didn't need, and that they should be allowed to order their computers directly, specifying the components that they wanted and getting the price that matched those needs.
You dropped several jewels there that I'm going to make sure that we that we include in the show notes. I wasn't aware of that meeting that recently took place, and I definitely want to make sure that we have a link to that. More information about that for all of you.
There's an article, the Harvard Business Review wrote about it, and then Denise Leone wrote about it. And either Fortune or Inc., one of the two. Yeah, so it's the Business Roundtable.
All right. And, you know, you are so right. If we are able to align our thoughts with our behavior, with our speech, how we approach the work that we do, and we're able to share that with others, we have some contagion there. We're doing it in an authentic way. We're going to gain forward momentum. So I really do appreciate your messaging and everything that you've shared with us today. Do you have anything coming up on the horizon?
Oh, sure. So yes, my new book is launching on Monday, and it is called Think, Do, Say, How to Seize Attention and Build Trust in a Busy, Busy World. So that's one. Secondly, there's a podcast called The Coup through Rogers Frequency Podcast Network. And The Coup looks at disruption through the lens of a political coup d'etat. And we look at adding value. We know that the real disruptors in any category are the ones who are adding value and solving problems that the establishment can't or won't. So I think that's a trend in business we're seeing, that the establishment's being taken out by insurgent forces. And so The Coup is available wherever you get your podcasts. And then Yeah, I'm speaking all the time. I don't have a, because I'm typically hired by organizations to come in and speak. I do about 70 keynotes a year. Not many of them are public, but yeah, follow me on social. Everything is just at Ron Tite. It's the benefit of having a first and last name with seven letters.
We got to keep it simple, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I love it. You have definitely built up enough trust to warrant all of the self-promotion. Thank you. This has been really thought-provoking.
Thanks, Heather. Thanks for having me. And thanks to everybody out there in listening land. Thanks for listening in.
Right, the interwebs.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the Lead with Levity podcast. Go to www.leadwithlevity.com to access show notes and other resources.